Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Always a pleasure to be able to spend some time sharing how we can live a longer and healthier and happier life. Today we begin with a study from Arizona State University. The study explores the effects of dietary choline, that's C-H-O-L-I-N-E, deficiency on neurologic and system-wide health. Now historically, going back to the 1970s, choline and inositol were considered very important. In fact, they were probably the most important part of the B complex, B1, B2, B6, pantothenic acid. These were also part of that, B12. But it was choline and inositol. And that was because of the work of a doctor up in Canada, an MD, PhD, who started the Orthomolecular Medical Society. He found that choline and inositol were very good for people who had mental conditions. And in any case, his name was Dr. Abram Hoffer, and I work with him an awful lot. Well, today, there's brand new information on choline. Now, by the way, choline is an essential nutrient produced in small amounts in the liver and found in foods, broccoli, beans, all types of beans, and in eggs and meat. It's vital for human health. A new study explores how deficiencies, when you don't have enough, of dietary choline adversely affects the body, and it may be a missing piece in the puzzle of Alzheimer's disease. It's estimated that more than 90% of Americans are now meeting the recommended daily intake of choline. The current research conducted in mice suggests that dietary choline deficiency can have profound negative effects on the heart, the liver, and other organs. Lack of choline is also linked to profound changes in your brain associated with Alzheimer's disease. These include pathologies implicated in the development of two classic hallmarks of illness: amyloid plaques, those are the white streaks in the brain, which aggregate in the intracellular spaces between neurons, and tau, that's T-A-U, tangles, which condense within the bodies of neurons. The new research, led by Arizona State University and published in the peer-reviewed journal Aging Cell, describes the pathologies in normal mice deprived of choline. So, one more thing that we can do to make sure that our brains are not prematurely aging and do not cause disease. Something as simple as a B complex. I suggest for most people a 25 milligram B complex. That means 25 milligrams B1, B2, and B6, and folic acid, 500 micrograms, and vitamin B12, 500 micrograms a day. With choline and inositol, I would say at about 300 milligrams. Now, that covers most of the important B complex, and that can help you. All right? And again, on a good, healthy, plant-based diet, you've got a lot of choline. Soybeans, Brussels sprouts, all the nut family are rich in helping boost your choline, and that way it keeps your brain healthier longer. And I think all of us who have friends or family members who are in their 60s and 70s, and now because of COVID, we're seeing an increase in long COVID and dementia, aging of the brain. It's going rapidly in individuals. Now, there is a cancer that's very serious. It's called melanoma. And the University of East Finland and Kuopio University found that vitamin D is linked to reduced skin cancer risk. That's good news. Just consider all the people who simply get too much sun at one time. I mean, even when I was younger, I never saw the purpose of laying on the sand and just baking like you're an egg, right? What's the point of that? And then you get the burn, and then you get some brown, and that's very dangerous. That burn can later lead to cancer. In fact, down here in Florida, skin cancer is just, it's epidemic. I mean, you'll start looking at people's hands and arms and neck and their face, and you see what happened when they didn't protect themselves or they got too much direct sun exposure. When I work out every day, I work out in trunks running shorts and a long shirt, no matter what the time of the year. Why? Because that shirt has a sun-blocking element in it, so it reduces your exposure to the sun by 50%. Also, their gloves are the same material, lightweight gloves, so it protects your hands and arms. I suggest if you live in places that have a lot of sun all the time, California, Nevada, for example, Texas, and Florida especially, you want to protect your sun, skin from the sun. But this new study finds that the regular use of vitamin D is associated with lower rates of melanoma skin cancer. And that's important. So the University of Eastern Finland and the hospital there, University Hospital, they looked at adults and determined by dermatologists to be at high risk of skin cancer, such as melanoma, as well as squamous cell carcinoma and basal cell carcinoma. And vitamin D helped lessen that by a substantial margin. You don't need a lot of vitamin D unless you have the flu or cold or your viral infection. Then, yeah, you need that high level of what we call 25-hydroxyvitamin D3, or just simple vitamin D3. I would suggest on a maintenance basis, probably in the neighborhood of 2,000 to 3,000 units a day. But if you're around people who are sick, if you're taking care of someone that has got a flu or cold, then you could up that to 5,000 units a day. And if you start to get sick, hopefully at that point you're in the hands of a holistic therapist, a doctor or holistic nurse who can guide you, then that goes up much higher. Don't self-medicate, but the amount of vitamin D3 that I would suggest people take if they have COVID at the very beginning, very high doses. My protocols are on GaryNall.com to help guide you. From University of Arkansas, new research further gives the case that exercising promotes youthfulness. Now, I've been an athlete my whole life, and everyone was athletic when I grew up. You had some people who were kind of nerdish, and they were always reading or doing something with their brain. The rest of us were out were doing something with our body. And sports was a big deal in a small town. Do you remember that film a long time ago with Jeff Bridges? Where he's in a small Texas town, and the Last Picture Show was the title of it. Well, many of us grew up with that small town way of living, you know, where you had to show that you deserve respect. It didn't come unless you showed it, and you tended to do things that were important for your community. In my hometown, there was no YMCA. It closed, and so there was no place for the younger people to go and work out. And so we got a wealthy woman in town. I was very nervous. I went up to her house. She was, now whether she was the original Tugboat Annie, but everyone called her Tugboat Annie. Her name was Miss Harris, and she had the big house in our town, and she was the person who gave the most money for all the different projects. And so I knocked on her door, and I said that, could you help us? She said, well, how so? I said, we don't have a boys club, and we don't have the money to, you know, buy anything. And she said, what do you need? I said, well, if you could buy us a building or a big house, we'd fix it up, and we'd, you know, we'd put all the equipment in. That we could do. She said, okay. The whole thing took 5 minutes, literally. I'm like, you know, 16 years old, 17 years old. And so she says, go get, she called a broker, and a broker found a place on 6th Street. I actually have a clip in my scrapbook of myself and some others, and the newspaper, Parker Daily News, says, you know, these high school students just created the first boys club in town down on this street. House probably wasn't very expensive, but it was kind of her to do that. And then we had a place to go and exercise. Then we also had a gym in a garage. You know, when you don't have a lot of money, you create ways of making something happen on the low economic end. So we just cleared out a garage, brought in the weights, and that's where we go to pump iron, keep ourselves in shape. But exercise was crucial. And here's a funny little thing. I don't know if any of you had this when you were growing up, but no one had a last name, or they were only called by their last name, like Noel, you know, or they never said Gary. For some reason, I can never once in my life heard anyone call me Gary. It was Gary, like G-A-R, or G. My producer for 13 years, Adria Eismeyer, I'm sure many of you remember her. She put all those, well, she produced not only the radio show on WMCA and before that on Balkan Echo Studios up on 96th Street from 1967 through 1971, then WMCA, and then later on BAI. Anyhow, all those retreats upstate at Grossinger's, 14 of them, Concord, about seven of them, the Homowac, the Granite, she made all that happen. In any case, when I remember people who are so important, I just always like to acknowledge them. In any case, I grew up in a small town, as many people watching right now have grown up in similar circumstances. Even if you grew up in Manhattan or in New Jersey, in one of the towns or in one of the neighborhoods, you still relate to the people in your neighborhood. There's certain ethics, there's certain etiquette, there's certain ways of dealing with people. And when I was growing up, exercise and sports were very important. Not just watching sports, but participating in it, because we didn't have a whole lot to do. We just like American Graffiti, where everyone drives around at night looking for the very people they were in class with all day and somehow think, oh, they're over this Fat Boy or Shoney's or one of the big boys, one of the hamburger joints. In any case, it's just part of the ritual of growing up. And it was innocent. It was fun. But being an athlete meant that you were trying to get as in healthy shape as you could. And I believe that part of the reason was because you saw your parents and your aunts and uncles and your grandparents, and they were not in good shape most of the time. I didn't see morbid obesity, and I didn't see a lot of obesity, but I saw people who simply tried to measure their diet so that they didn't overeat, because that was also something, you know, that people pride themselves, you know, being so-called trim. But that we didn't have a healthy diet. Even in the summertime, it'd be rare that we get some fresh blackberries, and you'd have to go out and pick them because we didn't have farmers markets, and the Kroger's and the other big stores didn't carry fresh, locally grown produce. And because my family lived in a little house in the city and also shared a space in a country home, we got to go out and pick wild berries, and that was a lot of fun. And it was tasty. I just remember how different a berry tasted when you picked it versus when you bought it. Because if you bought it, it might have been a week or 10 days since it was harvested. And picking peaches and cherries, and those were wonderful times if you had the chance to experience that. But also, there was something that was never spoken about, but it was something that was obvious. I never saw anyone getting healthier the older they became. No one. And to the contrary, 35 was middle-aged, 35, middle-aged. As a result, once a person hit post-college or post-high school, that was it. I never saw them exercise after that. I mean, in the summertime, they might belong to a softball game, but you didn't see people out there running. I never, never. In fact, my group never ran. We lifted weights. We didn't lift weights for bodybuilding. That we didn't do. We lifted weights for powerlifting, meaning building strength. And I'm glad I did it, because that strength then has helped me maintain my health now. In fact, when I got to New York City, I was a strong 236 pounds, all muscle. And there's some earlier photographs, my daughter and I in Riverside Park, and you see the size of the legs. And I could deadlift almost 500 pounds. So, but once you're past that, once you leave town, then it's up to you to find out what exercise you can do, how often you should do them. And we didn't have the exercise science then. And so we didn't have a lot of good science. We certainly had no good nutrition science. It was terrible. It came from home economics teachers. Remember those? And they would tell you to eat three portions of meat a day, three portions of dairy a day, three portions of bread a day, or your carbohydrates. No one talked about sugar being bad or salt raising your high blood pressure. The big thing at the time was margarine. Margarine will help protect your heart, where lard, and which was pig fat mainly, that's what people used in everything. I mean everything. I remember my mom would put a big roast in the oven and just put a lot of pig fat. I would watch it. There was cans of lard, a gallon cans. She would scoop out like three, like, you know, a death scoop of lard, and then put it clear around the beef, and then she'd massage it, and then put some vegetables in for me and some potatoes in for me, and then we go to church. And then 3 hours later, we come back, and the beef would be, you know, perfect for them to eat, and I would get a plate or a bowl of the potatoes and everything else. Of course, when something is cooked for 3 hours, you don't know what's what. I had no idea what real broccoli was versus string beans, because everything just kind of went mushed together, and it tasted like that. And the only flavor we had was salt and pepper. That was it. No seasonings. And because, again, that wasn't the thing at that time. It had been at one time in American history up through the 1930s. Then everything became modernized. The TV dinner. Remember that? Remember the little aluminum trays? You sit up and watching Ted Mack's Amateur Hour or Sid Caesar or one of those programs, or Ed Sullivan. And then you pop into the oven, the microwave oven, that little container, and you take the lid off, and there's your tasteless food. You get your meat dish, your potatoes with gravy and some vegetable. That's how we ate. We're lucky any of us made it to 30. It was like rat food. Poison. It was terrible. But we didn't have honest nutrition science. In fact, I won a debate on WMCA. In fact, he agreed to debate me. Barry Farber was going to act as the moderator of a debate between myself and the top so-called nutrition authority in America from Harvard. And he didn't show up. He was playing tennis and said he couldn't be bothered. So Barry, when we were told at the last moment he wasn't showing up, he just challenged me as a devil's advocate. And I said, well, here's a list of all the companies that sponsor this man at Harvard. Here's who gives all the money to all these nutrition departments at universities. And I went down all the sugar makers, all the cereal companies, all the soft drink companies. I said, so when he answers a question, is he answering as a person or as a spokesperson? There's a big difference. And I asked him many times. I did about somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 debates during a 20-year period from about 1967 to about 1985, and then nobody would debate anymore. As I've asked Anthony Fauci to debate, wouldn't debate, and others. In any case, we had zero healthy dieting in America at that time. Even the people who were in the health field had no background in health. They were the most unhealthy people I've ever met in my life. Sorry, as an aside, but I went to one meeting in Las Vegas at a national health conference, and I was one of the 12 speakers over a three-day period, and I was one of the last, and I'm listening to all these people, and all they're talking about is their area of they control. Well, this guy's the high-protein diet. And so when I ask people for their background, did any of them have a background in nutrition or in, dietetics? The answer was no. And the PhD who made sure you called him doctor on television would go on television smoking a cigarette and drinking coffee with sugar in it. And he was a so-called health expert. Now, he wasn't a health expert in anything. He had a PhD from New York University in public relations, I believe it was. But no one knew that. I did, because I did a little research. I never will forget the time that he wanted to have a meeting with me. And Clinton Miller, the head of the National Health Federation, I'm a young kid, right? I'm in my early 20s, and I'm meeting the so-called, you know, the top health guru in all of America. And we go in this little restaurant. I order a salad. He's got this meat and white bread and all this crap. I didn't say anything. And he says, kid, he said, you got to get on board. He said, otherwise, you're going to have a very short career. You know, on radio, come and go. I'm on WOR, you know, for dozens of years. And he said, so you're going to have a very short career unless you become a part of what we're trying to do. And I said, well, sir, I'd rather just be on my own. Thank you. Because I don't see any healthy people in the health movement. I don't see any good advice in the health movement. I see books that are bestsellers selling millions of copies, but every single recipe in that book is a disease-producing recipe. I can't abide by that. I'm sorry. He says, well, then appreciate your short career, your one-book wonder. Gets up and leaves. 47 million books later sold, and I've doubled his time on the air. And I'm thinking, wow, what a fraud. The entire health movement. And that's why I have nothing to do with it. You may not be aware of that. I don't go to their conferences. I want nothing to do with them. And I haven't since that day in Las Vegas when I just saw it was just greed, stupidity. I say that simply because today we do have legitimate science, mainstream science. Here's the irony. Some of the best ways in the world to live a longer life and a healthier life are just go to PubMed and type in vitamin C as therapeutic benefits and safety range and therapeutic range, because what the actual science in the peer-reviewed literature showing how much vitamin C you need dwarfs what you're being told to. I mean, and if you really want to have a functional nutritional-based diet, then you have to concentrate upon foods that are high nutrient dense, meaning they got a lot of phytonutrients, a lot of antioxidants, and that can work in your body. And also vitamin D deficiency, vitamin C deficiency, vitamin E deficiency, B complex deficiency, protein deficiency. And as you get older, what happens? You eat less protein. Why? Well, because frequently digestion is difficult the older you get. And people continue to worsen that digestion by overeating when they do eat and drinking coffee after a meal, which you should never do because it's highly anabolic. And if coffee were created for the first time today, it would be banned. That's the reality. And I only deal in reality because I am a scientist. I am a nutritionist. I am a dietitian. I'm a clinician. I've counseled tens of thousands of people. I've done over 55 clinical studies. And yet the information that I would share with you is the information that never seems to reach the average person. Instead, it's fad diet, miracle cures. You know, take this one product and you're going to be young forever, or have an erection for the next 7 days. In some respects, we're no better than when I came into this field in 1967. In other ways, we are, except we don't have models of health. We have the guys who are on the steroids or pumping. We have some senior citizens that, hey, look at them. They're actually out there walking. Isn't that great? And they're 50 years old. How good is that? Oh, they're only out there walking because they no longer have the pain because of these 17 medications they're taking, with side effects being everything from death to death to death to death, and even self-embalming if you take this one particular form of aspirin. You don't have to worry about going to a funeral home. When I look at the world we're in today and I think how easy and simple and non-complicated the truth is and how the truth actually works. Chromatin, C-H-R-O-M-A-T-I-N, comprises a complex mixture of DNA and proteins that form like structural bases of chromosomes in the cellular nuclei. And when cells die, they release cell-free chromatin particles and into the circulatory system. In 1996, evidence for tumor-derived DNA circulating in the blood of cancer patients was first reported. This evidence caught the interest of a doctor who is a professor emeritus and the chair of in translational research at the Memorial Center in Mumbai, India. And he found that when you're using two nutrients, copper, maybe 2 milligrams, low amount, But resveratrol, that makes a huge difference. You can break up this way that the body eliminates its dead tissue, and you can actually have the cells live a longer life. That's, you know, it's that simple. And you want healthy cells, all right? Healthy food going in, healthy cells. Healthy liquids going in, healthy cells. And by the way, one last thing. This is from Shanghai Tong University of Medicine. Deep meditation may alter your gut microbiome for better health. What's this mean in lay language? Taking 10 to 20 minutes a day, sitting quietly, being aware of your presence, but no distractions, no cell phones, no television, no radio, and just being present. That's known as deep meditation. Now, when you practice that for several years, it can help to regulate the gut bacteria and potentially lower the risk of physical and mental ill health. That's this study that was published in the Open Access Journal, General Psychiatry. So look at all the different resources and tools that are available to you, but then use them, manifest them. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Now we're going to go to a series of clips that are important. Why? Because they show us that we have been misled, either intentionally, with malice aforethought, or unintentionally, just out of ignorance, and not willing to accept that other people highly qualified in their field could offer insight that could make a difference. So, the first clip is just to give you an idea of how much of what we read or watch on television or in the major shows are controlled by the advertisers. In this case, we're only using one advertiser, Pfizer. And then you'll hear him say, and this is brought to you. So here's a question for you. How likely is it that if you're a news director, that you would allow your news staff to report on something that would be adverse to your advertisers? Because the advertisers will not advertise. They will not give you money, huge amounts of money, if what you're about to say on the air could cause their reputation to be adversely affected or them to get into litigation. So there's a lot of self-censorship. But I just want to show you how prevalent it is. And we don't, it's almost background noise. And this program is brought to you by such and such. Now, a lot of these are news shows. So then why don't we hear things like how successful the protocols using ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, monoclonal antibodies, why don't we ever hear that? Not a word of good news about life-saving therapies. Could it be because of the influence of advertisers on their revenue stream? Then we're going to hear from specific people. These are all highly qualified physicians and scientists telling you the different aspects of what we have been exposed to are simply wrong. So that's the first part. We're going to show you how this works. And I'll give you one example of this. At the very beginning, if you remember, I played a clip from a professional friend of mine who I filmed many times, had on the air many times, Dr. Carrie Mullis. And Carrie won the Nobel Prize in Science for discovering the PCR. And one of the things that he made clear was that it should never be used as a diagnostic tool because it's merely an amplification. In other words, it's perfect. It's showing you a tiny, tiny microscopic piece of a virus or bacteria or something because it's amplification, meaning you just keep saying another amplification. Here's the takeaway from this. My interview with Carrie Mullis, which was about an hour and 54 minutes, that went viral. Millions of people, I started seeing it in documentaries. No credit given to me, which I could say something about to the filmmaker, but I don't, because our policy is always, if I'm going to use a clip from someone's work, I'm going to give them credit. I'm going to let them know what we're doing and the context of which is being used. I was never given that same credit. So anytime you see Carrie Mullis, with a few exceptions, that's the film that they took it from. In any case, you'll see that. And so then we're told, get the PCR test. Now, this is why it's important. Everybody had to get a polymer chain reaction test, PCR, you would see lines of people in cars waiting to get their test. And if you tested positive, that means you had the virus. And then that suddenly became your case, meaning you were sick. You were capable of getting completely sick, going to a hospital and dying. There were no exceptions. It didn't matter whether you were 5-year-old or 50 or whether you were 80 years old. Everybody was equally at risk. That's what we were told and people believed it. Here's what I said at the time. They should never use this test. It's inaccurate. And about 95% of the positives were actually negatives. And you'll see that dealt with in detail in one of the interviews that's coming up. So you'll hear Anthony Fauci. You'll see him. And he'll say, anything above 36 amplifications is just junk. It's just debris. Then why did he not challenge all of the laboratories producing these PCR tests and the governmental agencies buying them that they were amplifying above 40 and above 45? Total garbage. No scientific benefit whatsoever. To the contrary, putting people who were tested positive in a state of acute anxiety, go home, stay at home. But I'm a 20-year-old athlete, no conditions, I'm a vegan. Doesn't matter. You go home and you stay home, you self-quarantine. That's where this led. And then they were called cases, but they weren't. And that then came the whole stay isolated. And that was terrible. Look at the consequences to everyone. So I just want to show you how bad the science has been, how corrupt the science has been, because in Anthony Fauci's world, you'll see him, hear him saying exactly what I'm saying right now. And we were way above the threshold. Now, Dr. Yeadon, who worked for Pfizer, that's why I got his clip. Everything's about Pfizer here. And for 17 years, he's saying that anything above 30, actually in the 20s, is going to be garbage. And yet, then you see Professor Emeritus and a top professor in virology from Oxford University, and you see all these other people, if you're watching it, and I hope you do, saying high amplification is of no value. And that was worldwide. So the high amplification gave us an idea that all these people were infected when they weren't. And they were all equally susceptible when they weren't. And so then we had to make sure everybody got the vaccine, which they shouldn't have had, because the science now shows that the multiply vaccinated are most vulnerable to being infected with COVID. Remember I showed you early on in Norway and Gibraltar and other countries where there was zero, not a single case in nursing homes, assisted living centers of COVID. They all got vaccinated and they all got COVID and they all died. And yet we still continue to follow the wrong protocols. That's why I'm doing this. And that's why it's so important that the next time they tell you what you should do, you'll say, hold on a second. You misled us. You lied to us. Why? What's the end game in all this? Well, that's to be determined. But what they have done has been all wrong. And I'm going to prove it right now.
Is brought to you by Pfizer.
CBS Health Watch, sponsored by Pfizer.
Anderson Cooper 360, brought to you by Pfizer.
ABC News Nightline, brought to you by Pfizer.
Making a difference, brought to you by Pfizer.
CNN Tonight, brought to you by Pfizer.
Early Start,
brought to you by Pfizer.
Friday night on Aaron Burnett Out Front,
brought to you by Pfizer.
This Week with George Stephanopoulos is brought to you by Pfizer.
This weather report brought to you by Pfizer.
Today's countdown to the royal wedding is brought to you by Pfizer.
And now a CBS Sports update brought to you by Pfizer.
Meet the Press data download brought to you by Pfizer.
This portion of CBS This Morning sponsored by Pfizer.
On how to find the hidden sugars in the American family diet. Sponsored by Pfizer.
I'm afraid I came to the conclusion, it's a big claim what I'm going to say, but it's literally every single one of the central narrative points that your government and mine tells you about this virus and what you should do, they're all lies.
I'm talking about Dr. Mike Yeadon,
This is a man we've talked a lot about. Let's just look at his resume for a second, shall we? Senior principal scientist of the Wellcome Research from 88 to 95, chief scientific officer, allergy and respiratory research, Pfizer R&D, vice president of allergy and respiratory head research, Pfizer Global R&D, CSO and VP allergy and respiratory research head, Pfizer Global R&D, consultant scientific advisory board, for Pulmatrix, consultant Apellis Pharmaceuticals, co-founder of Xiarco.
So I did notice that, as you mentioned, early in the summer, I started looking at what they were doing for diagnostics, and they were using this PCR test. I'm sure you've talked about it on your program. It's a very powerful technique, but it's not a good technique for diagnosing viral infections, as the inventor, Carrie Mullis, who won a Nobel Prize for its invention, will tell us repeatedly.
PCR is separate from that. It's just a process that's used to make a whole lot of something out of something. That's what
also,
it is. It doesn't tell you that you're sick, and it doesn't tell you that the thing you ended up with really was going to hurt you or anything like that.
It's good at detecting things, you know, a piece of DNA or RNA. But I noticed that I could see that they were being sneaky, you know, the people working in the UK, they refused to disclose how many cycles they were using. They refused to use an internal standard, and they claimed they didn't have samples of the virus. So I just thought, how can you not have an internal standard? Just for people who don't know, if you're using a diagnostic test, then you should always want to plot, you should use some of the thing you're trying to detect and put it into the test and show that it can detect it. And then you can use it, that method, to work out where to position the standard curve, as it were, when you try and test a clinical sample. And all I could see is they were not using these standards, and they were using as much amplification as the machines would use, rather than the amount that you should use to work out if infection was present. And by the summer, I was absolutely certain they were turning up the amps to 11. You know, over amplifying it, not using internal standards. What else was there?
So let me just jump in here really quick for my audience that maybe knew some or a little bit more educated. What we're talking about, running these cycles here in America, New York Times, we did an investigation in PCR tests. We found here in America that every lab apparently was running about 45 cycles on these PCR tests.
It's called a PCR test, and it involves amplifying genetic material by doubling it in dozens of cycles until you have billions or trillions of the original molecules, and then using those results to determine if you have enough of the identified RNA fragment to be considered positive.
And I always just say it's like a microscope where you just keep turning it and going deeper and deeper in. Eventually, you can be looking at something so, you know, a dead fragment cell that you ran into. It doesn't mean your body is infected with it. But at 45 cycles, the amplification is so gigantic, anything looks like a problem.
And with PCR, if you do it well, you can find almost anything in anybody. Because if you can amplify one single molecule up to something that you can really measure, which PCR can do, then there's just very few molecules that you don't have at least one single one of them in your body, okay?
Yes, it's exactly right. So certainly by about this time last year, some very assiduous workers had tested, I think, hundreds of people who had SARS-CoV-2, and they've worked out the relationship between symptoms, the number of cycles of this test before you could detect whether they had the virus present or not, and here's a really important thing, whether they could culture the virus, grow the virus on, shall we say, in cells. And they found that when you got a positive test beyond about 25 cycles, it became more and more difficult to be able to infect some cells in a culture dish. In other words, there wasn't enough live virus there to deliberately infect a culture dish when you're trying to infect.
You almost never can culture virus from a 37 threshold cycle. So I think if somebody does come in with 37, 38, even 36, you got to say, you know, it's just dead nucleotides, period.
Mm. For me, I drew the line and thought, well, okay, if you're over about 25 cycles, if it takes more cycles than that to show some presence of little snippets of this virus, then there's not enough virus there to make you infectious at all. And right. and that number seems to be in the mid-20s. No one's really sure, but mid-20s perhaps. But as you say, in the UK, I think they were using 39 cycles. And as you say, I've heard over 40.
And a cycle threshold above 35 generally is people who are not infectious. Yet NHS England documentation that has not been updated since January runs cycle thresholds to 45, which is identifying people who are not infectious.
Here in New Zealand, an Official Information Act request has revealed that labs are typically running 40 cycles.
And so if you were to go to, say, 40 cycles, you might get a positive result, but it might be a false positive.
I would be very unhappy about a 40-cycle PCR.
Each cycle doubles the amount of material, roughly, in this test. Mm. And so they were multiplying, believe it or not, I did the maths, it was about a trillion fold.
So what's happened to the autopsy, Ryan?
Well, Anthony Fauci told our government to tell people don't do autopsies on COVID patients. You cannot find that for which you do not look. I have a post-vaccine 9-year-old on my desk, dead. I don't want to see one more child post-vaccine ever on my desk. Are the autopsies starting to happen? You bet they are, finally, because people are saying, well, why wouldn't we do them? And in that same town from which this 9-year-old died, a healthy 22-year-old wrestler, after his third shot, is now also coming to be on my desk so I can determine the cause of death there. We're told don't do autopsies, don't look. And that's what your government is giving you for data. Don't ask, don't tell, don't look. These are not the drugs you're looking for. Everything is safe and effective. Go jab up the children with a shot that doesn't work for a virus that isn't here anymore, for a virus that most of them are already recovered from. Safe and effective. Don't do science. Don't ask a question. Destroy the careers of those that do ask a question that are only in it for humanity. Valid questions to ask yourself.
I'd like your input, please. I'd like for you to call us at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, and give us your point of view on this. You've just seen 4 unique clips. Now I'd like your input. Now we're going to go to another clip. This is from Redacted. This is from the Morris of husband and wife team. They really do good reporting, and they're honest on their facts, and they have some very important people on to discuss issues. In this case, they're bringing on Dr. McCullough. Let's hear what Dr. McCullough has to say, since he is one of the most respected scientists in the world, in history, and yet they've done everything possible to destroy him.
Well, joining us now to talk about these Pfizer censorship revelations is author of Courage to Face COVID, a remarkable book. You should all read it. Renowned cardiologist, Dr. Peter McCullough. Doc, welcome back to the show. Good to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
So I would flip on CNBC in the morning sometimes to see some of the business news. And just about every stinking morning, I would see Dr. Scott Gottlieb on the show on a regular basis, on a daily basis, to get their daily COVID update. So we learn in these Pfizer documents, we learn in these Twitter documents, just the lengths that he was going to try to censor voices, particularly around natural immunity. So Doc, let's start there on the natural immunity piece. That's the part that really stood out to me.
Clayton, I can tell you, I was appalled at what I learned. You know, I'm a frequent contributor on Fox News, Newsmax, many stations. I do it all pro bono. I don't receive a dollar for doing this. And we learned that former FDA chairman Scott Gottlieb, who's young and he's underaccomplished as an academic physician, he certainly isn't at my level of standing. You could tell he was ripe to go on the take. And we learned now that he was being paid $365,000 a year for Pfizer, by Pfizer, had a frequent contributor contract with CNBC. And he was going on in a near, almost a daily basis from his garden patio, if you remember, through the pandemic. I watched it too. And Andrew, Becky, and Joe and CNBC took it hook, line, and sinker, everything he said. And he misled the country regarding natural immunity, regarding the pandemic, juicing the country with fear, and then juicing and ginning up interest and almost certainly investment in Pfizer for their vaccine.
So he on Twitter, of course, in response to some of these revelations, is now defending himself, saying, well, I was just merely trying to quiet some of the people who are being mean to me personally, basically. Do you buy that line?
Let me tell you what, if he thinks he's received some mean treatment on Twitter, there are so many esteemed scientists, including myself, who are suspended for no reason. We're constantly attacked. We've had unfollow programs, unlisting programs, blacklisting, shadow banning. We faced it all. Gottlieb defrauded America for the profits of Pfizer. That's what we've learned. He was actually communicating with Twitter, and they were doing it. They were silencing scientists who were bringing forward important information on natural immunity. It mattered because the whole world was getting COVID, and people who were recovered, they needed to know what to expect. And Gottlieb deceived the world on this.
If people tuned in to CNBC, a mom who was at home with her kids, maybe the kids were homesick from school that day, and she flips on CNBC, and she sees this doctor who's telling her, go out, get your children vaccinated, go out, get these booster shots, do all of these things. I mean, who knows what happens to those families in those situations, but they're trusting this person that they're putting on the air as a doctor, as a you know, fair and impartial impartial voice in this, but he's not at all.
He's not. In fact, being a former FDA commissioner now is used as a false title. It's used as a pretext for government honesty and integrity, that he would carry honesty and integrity from a government position into a paid board member position. And we've now seen this with the commissioner that followed him, Stephen Hahn, who joined the investment capital firm for Moderna. We had Rick Bright inside the White House joins the Rockefeller Foundation. There is a very, very deep and corrupt collusion conflict of interest between industry and our public health agencies. And the mechanism is but basically these interrelationships that occur when people are in office to get their next job after they leave office.
And I'll get you out here on this, doctor. He's not the only one. I mean, there's a long history here of this cozy relationship with FDA former heads of the biopharmaceutical complex, right?
It's true. This has happened for a very long time. We know the media now is complicit, but the media itself took money from the COVID-19 Community Core Program. Remember, in early 2021, the White House and the Health and Human Services floated out $13 billion to the media, sports teams, churches, other groups. And we know now there's a listing of nearly 4,000 major media outlets that took federal money to push the government false narrative. And I can tell you, you just follow the money on this one. It's both Pfizer and the U.S. government colluding with the media. Everyone here is culpable. America should never trust a former FDA official in any capacity in the media.
Back in a moment. Please call in 888-874-4888. I'd like to get your opinion on what you've been seeing. And they're still continuing. Nothing's changed there. And so did anyone come forward and apologize that all the people, the hundreds of millions of people in the United States that were tested, we gave you a false positive test that had no basis in science? In fact, the good scientist said, don't use this test to determine if a person has COVID. And they didn't listen. Why? I'd like to hear from you next. Please stay with us. Please give us a call. I'm sure all of you have been impacted to varying degrees by the pandemic and its lockdowns and vaccines. If you have adverse reactions, but no one's taken it seriously, we do. And I'd like to hear your point of this, how everything is based upon money and power. We're going to go to those calls in a moment, But I want to give you a special. I've never done this before. This is the first time on this special. And by the way, starting on Friday, I'll have a brand new product. Really exciting. So here's the special for today. I realize we're not reading enough, especially books that are empowering, that have resources, that can help us. So I put together four books that I have right now: Healing Foods Cookbook, No More Diabetes, Overcoming Cancer, and Rejuvenate with Juicing. Now, the regular retail price of these would be $90.88. You're getting them, ready for this, $49.95. That's a big 45% full value discount. Why would you want a book on juicing? Well, how about the raw food advantage in juicing, the pre-digested meal, also the different micronutrients, enzymes, and chlorophyll, and phytonutrients that are in juices, then recipes for breakfast foods, desserts, salad dressings, dips, spreads, soups, main dishes. And then also, I have a 7-day meal plan for helping you rejuvenate your body. But let's go over to another book on cancer. I go through all the things to avoid if you want to turn off inflammation in your body, how to adapt a healthy alkaline diet, enlisting the antioxidants and each antioxidant, what it actually does in the body. And then the practice of whole body approaches, the Gerson therapy, the isolsa approach, the eclectic triphasic medical system, the anti-neoplasm therapy, Revici therapy, ozone therapy. All of this is in there. And then also recipes here, anti-cancer recipes. But how about also the next book on diabetes, Pushing Back Against Diabetes, the Natural Approach. All the different experts on the natural approach is something that, in my world, it's easy. Plus the testimonies of people, I reversed their diabetes and their stories. And then the wonderful cookbook. I mean, it's beautiful photographs and great, delicious gourmet vegan recipes. You're getting all four of those books, all four, for a simple price. All right? You're saving a lot, and you're getting information that will really educate you. So call this number, please, 877-627-5065. That's 877-627-5065. It'll be shipped out today. Or speak with Neil in our vitamin closet from noon to 8 at 646-926-5430. 646-926-5430. Or you can just go on to GaryNall.com and you can order them yourself in 1 minute there. All right? Great special. And you're going to use these because these are reference books, meaning you can go back to them over and over and over again. I remember when I was 1972, I was on a San Francisco big morning show. It was a long show. And I was one of the first guests. And it was about my Complete Handbook of Nutrition, which is the biggest selling health book in American history, as far as I'm aware. And I did my segment, went back to my hotel, which is a couple blocks away. And then one of the next guests was Joanne Woodward, the wife of Paul Newman. And she said, oh, I wish I would have met Gary, because Paul and I keep his book on our bedside table in case there's anything we need to know about health. We just look into it. So I got up, I ran back down to the studio and had a chance to meet her and have a little chat with her. So you never know when you're going to need information. Well, isn't it nice to know that you have it? And by the way, I'm updating Get Healthy Now. I'm updating the Complete Encyclopedia of Natural Healing. I'm almost doubling the size of the book with all new information and all from peer-reviewed literature. So all the clinicians in this country, all the wellness counselors and health coaches and dietitians, every single statement in this book is backed by quality scientific research. That's just coming at you. Again, call 877-627-5065. Let's go over and say hello to some of the people standing by. And we have Jeremiah, the Oracle of Harlem. Hi, Jeremiah.
Oh, I like that moniker. How are you today, Gary? First of all, I want to apologize. Last time I called in, I muted myself to listen to your answer, and I didn't hang up. I heard every word that you said, and I appreciated your response. So sorry for not responding after you answered my question. But in response to Peter McCullough, I just want to say, you know, I've been watching things very closely since all of this stuff happened, the emergence of the biosecurity state. And one thing that I noticed is that the dissenting voices, Peter McCullough, Dr. Sachard Bhakti, Robert Malone, on and on and on. I mean, I can name a lot of doctors who have made a lot of interesting comments and observations. The dissenting voices were much more specific and clear than the people pushing the safe and effective slogan, which, of course, we know at this point was an empty slogan with no legal or medical basis. So, you know, I think we're in such a serious situation here and such a scary situation. And not to invoke some sort of spirituality per se, because of course everyone has their own beliefs. But if you believe generally in some kind of concept of karma, or basically, you know, if you do good things, then good things are likely to happen to you. And if you do bad things, then eventually something bad is likely to happen to you. One thing that's so scary about this situation is I really am concerned, again, for lack of a better term, about the karma being invoked. When someone issues a sincere warning and you tell them to piss off, basically. I mean, how dumb could you be? You know, it's like if you leave my apartment as a guest and I say, hey, you know, you probably shouldn't walk in that direction at this time of night. There's been some serious crime that's gone on over there. I would just walk the other way. And then your response is, oh, you can go to hell. I know how to take care of myself and so on and so forth. I mean, you know, if you don't want to take someone's advice, that's fine. But why would you be rude and aggressive to someone who said something out of concern for you? So that's what's just so concerning, is that the people who are saying, hey, this is causing cardiac problems. I mean, you think Dr. McCullough is joking? I mean, does Dr. Asim Malhotra come across as somebody who's making a joke? I mean, I can't believe it. I'm beside myself that people would totally disregard such serious and clearly stated warnings. And that's my comment for today, Gary.
You've made several important points here. I would give you a suggestion, and that is when people are adamant not to take your advice, even though your advice is given unconditionally, you're asking nothing in return, just to see, and I always say this, is this reasonable? And if it's not reasonable, reject it. If it's reasonable, you have another tool that broadens your perspective of a problem you wouldn't otherwise know. And I believe that most Americans took this to protect their families, themselves, and because an authority figure told them to. They didn't believe that an authority figure, an entire government, and all of its agencies, and the World Health Organization, and all of its agencies, and the media, and all of its investigative journalism, would intentionally misdirect people. But that's exactly what they did. Now, you can ask why, and we would have a different motive for each situation. But the people in power knew that it was not safe and effective. They knew it. The results are in, and we have their actual studies. We also knew that the test, that's why I played the PCR piece today. And you can go up and look under Kerry Mullis, the interview I did in an hour and 54 minutes of real information and debate. And Fauci wouldn't debate him at the University of South Carolina when the president wanted him to debate Kerry Mullis. He wouldn't do it. So that's part of it. And what I call a maladaptive acceptance of something that you should have been extremely diligent in doing your own homework. But we become a nation expectant of the government to always be right about everything and guide us and lead us in the right direction. Secondly, in some individuals, and we don't know what percentage, what a person disdains about themselves but is hidden, they project upon other people. So if you don't trust yourself or the judgments you've made in life, how likely are you to trust anyone else's advice, good or bad? And then you become self-righteous about it. And that takes it into a different realm at the psychological level. Instead of reasonable debate and dialogue, which is completely needed and necessary in science and health, and in everything for that matter. That's why I say, you know, the people talking about the Green New Deal are all wrong. They're causing massive destruction. They're causing people to starve to death, to freeze to death. They're living in the wrong places. We need to go to a healthier environment, but you also have to have a spiritual mindset to guide people there so you don't simply cut them off and have them go through a shock therapy, is what we've done, until you can make that transition to a healthier and better place. So again, we're more interested in the power and control that comes in the moment, and that's almost always because someone has a hidden interest in the outcome. And so we have almost like a cult-like belief system of adherence within the American public, unless a person is a person that prides himself in doing their own homework and being an individualist. So thank you once again. And there's our oracle from Harlem, Jeremiah. I'm going to ask, we have Phil from California. Phil, could you please call back tomorrow? I promise to take your call, first call, and you can have up to 5 minutes to share your point of view. Are you on board with that, Phil? Okay, because I'm looking at the clock and we're out of time. I do want to suggest this, and that is that some people are very interested in calling Luann about what I had mentioned at one time on one occasion about an intentional community. Over the next 2 months, she is doing interviews with people, meeting some people to see whether or not their needs would fit within what the intentional community provides. And in some cases, people simply want the place to chill out. They don't want to work. They don't want to do projects. They've done projects. Many of them are semi-retired or retired. Many of them have worked hard their whole life and deserve a respite, in which case they just want to be around other healthy-minded people, having nice vegan meals and healthy juices, and be able to take the time that they didn't have earlier in life to read the books, to watch the videos. We have a theater there also where people can watch. I have over 100 my documentaries there, plus we have about 1,000 others. And be in one of the most pristine, pure, healthy, positive environments in America. Other people are broke, and they want to do something on a project. They don't have the resources to do so. And so I put my own resources to build them structures where they can actually start. You know, what isn't it nice if you don't pay rent and you're not paying for a lot of the services, but you have a chance to see if your idea will grow. So we have people want to do homesteading projects. So that's a different reason for being there. And right now we have three people who've been there for a year and they've mastered their projects and they've done extremely well. And so they're as happy as can be. If you want to hear some of their thoughts and look at the property, go to GaryNall.com. It's right there. You can see a whole 32-minute video on what it looks like. And boy, there are a lot of good places with a lot of wonderful people at different places, intentional communities around the United States. I intend to limit this one to 10 people. That's it. Some have 100. But you should look around and see what's available. Look at videos of the place. See whether or not your needs meet theirs, and that's, you know, then you choose. But if you want to speak with Luann about whether or not you would fit in either doing nothing but using it as a place for quality of life, or you want to do a project, all of that is capable, and you'll call Luann at 903-881-7008, 903-881-7008. That's it for today, and Phil will get to you, I promise, on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day, everyone.